Mike Costa.
Cat Guy tucks his shirt into his shorts with the belt. Cat Guy wears a cell phone on his hip.
And Judson Richards.
I am not Cat Guy.
Here's Costa and Judson.
Hour number three. Costa, Richards, Ben Fletcher.
Boys!
The only part that didn't change as of yesterday.
What's going on, boys?
Change is good. Change is great. Costa threw a change up at me a minute ago. We'll dive into that in just a minute. Hey, coming up in 10 minutes, one of the guys that we've really enjoyed talking to, maybe we can all continue to cry over Fran Moraes together.
Please.
Because that's how we came together. Matt Snyder of CBS Sports, who wrote and kind of fought for Fran Moraes to be in the Home Run Derby. We all got him to Cleveland together. It just wasn't in the Home Run Derby.
But we found the finish line eventually.
Where is Fernando Tatis Jr.? And I've gone and looked at the numbers, and we can discuss it with Matt. How close is Fernando Tatis Jr. Is becoming Rookie of the Year? And how much do the Padres actually need to win to help him get to Rookie of the Year? Because one of the guys he's up against is an Atlanta Brave. And Atlanta Braves are playing their tails off. And that could vastly affect Fernando Tatis Jr. Maybe it could be something that the Padres actually rise up for, mm-hmm. play more for to be competitive, and keep Fernando Tatis Jr. in this thing. We'll get to that upcoming in about 10 minutes. Just a reminder, yesterday was a great day for Extra 1360. And personally, there is something different about this show. So just a reminder, Nick Hardwick, John Schaefer, middays, that has changed. Darren Smith, back at it today. Show number two, Darren Smith, Marty Caswell, Jim Russell at noon. Hopefully we'll hear very, very little of Jim. If the bosses ask anything, that's what I'll tell them. Then we got the three-man crew.
Oh, I mean, that's
a think tank, boy. You got Steve Hartman, you got Rich Ormberg, John Schaefer in the afternoons, and then Nick Hardwick. Nick is still a focal point of Extra 1360. You will hear him Mondays and Fridays in the 8 o'clock hour with us in the mornings to preview on Fridays and really dive into what went down Aztecs football, NFL football on Monday mornings in the 8 o'clock hour as well. It's a great day, man.
It is a great day, and it's a great day when it's quality, great people staying in the building and quality, great people who are coming into the building. And that happened yesterday.
Great takeaway that I had from a Darren Smith show is something I was like, well, maybe we should say it more. Download the iHeartRadio app. That was a big part of it. You can listen to us in a myriad of ways. On Extra 1360, I love the terrestrial sound. But, of course, everywhere you go around the world, iHeartRadio app, Extra 1360. You can subscribe to Costin Richards.
So easy.
And Fletch does a brilliant job. The show, it is there hour by hour by hour and by interview with a few clicks of a button. It could not be an easier way to listen to the show. I listen to it from the iHeartRadio app all the time when working in the yard out in the pine.
Out in the pine.
You do that too, right?
All the time.
Put your phone in your pocket.
Yeah.
Yep. Yard dog sitting next to yard pup. Yard pup made a bold statement.
I did. I think the Chargers are going to the Super Bowl, and it's all because of Easton Stick. Now let's talk about Fernando Tatis Jr. Listen.
Was this because I was poking you about
your
Raiders?
I've been thinking
you
about
just
it.
Changed it. You okay? When did this epiphany hit you?
It kind of has been the specter in my weak little shoulders since the season ended last year for them. Yeah, they were humiliated by the Patriots. After going 12-4 in the regular season. But I look at what they have done, and some people can say, well, wait a second. They haven't done much to shore up that offensive line, and that's where it all starts, because if Phillip Rivers is not given the time to do what he does, then they're screwed. If that offensive – that offensive line performs, Phillip, I think, is going to have a pretty damn good year. Melvin Gordon in the picture or not – I don't think there's much drop-off when you have that triumphant of running backs. Hunter Henry, absolutely healthy, one of the top tight ends in the NFL. You may have one of the top three wide receiver duos in the NFL, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Offensively, I think they're great. Defensively, the moves they made, Jerry Tillery coming in from Notre Dame in the draft to shore up that middle. I think the linebacking core gets a little stability with Thomas Davis, even though he's an older guy, will see spot duty. But the pass rush is going to be formidable. And maybe most importantly, what the Chargers got going on in the secondary now, I don't think enough people are paying attention to. That is going to be a hard team to score on. And defense wins championships.
That was pretty good at convincing me.
And here's another one, Judd. And this
I disagree, but that I forgot some of those guys.
Here comes the Twilight Zone aspect of it. What is the site of, we would all argue, their worst defeat in the history of this team?
The Patriots in the playoffs last year?
Super Bowl 29 in Miami.
Wow. Oh, well, worse, I guess you could...
Humiliated.
Yeah.
At the hands of the 49ers. Where is the Super Bowl this year?
Miami.
Redemption. I'm telling you, the stars are lining up for the Chargers. And that's why I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl.
Even if you believed this, I'm still trying to... I'm very proud of you. Because, you know, at times... You know, you hold on to things. Like, if you scorn Costa...
I'm a Scorpio.
You hold on to it.
I do.
Almost to a level that I
is unhealthy.
Yeah. Perfect way of saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I want you to, like, just set your heart free with things and let it go. And,
yeah.
And so, we know, you're a San Diegan. You may be a Raider fan.
Right.
But you had an uncle that was on the staff, and that's how you fell for the Raiders, right?
Correct.
Okay. So, you are a San Diegan first. You are a Raiders fan second. So we understand, you know, the feelings in the city. The reason why I'm proud of you is, like, you put that aside, you think you see what you see. Now, Costa said the Chargers are going to the Super Bowl. You want to weigh in 844-570-1360. By the way, not on Costa, about the actual who's going to play in the Super Bowl and representing the AFC. Text line is wide open, 70470.
Your questions.
Well, the questions that I have, Fletch, I know you have a couple as well, about how this would work out. It isn't so much about, and I think that the offensive line is legitimately could be a problem of concern.
Russell Okung, we still don't know.
We don't know. You also don't have Melvin Gordon. I don't necessarily think that they're, like, much worse without Melvin Gordon. Mm-hmm. I think that they are better with him. And when you come to games that could be decided by a field goal, it could matter for Melvin Gordon if he ends up missing time. But my isn't so much about the roster of the Chargers. It's who I believe is just simply better.
The roster of the Chiefs?
Yeah, the roster of the Chiefs. You know what I really stack it up against? Anthony Lynn. When it comes down to crunch time, I think more of Andy Reid, as you should. Andy Reid has more experience. And I think we got a real indication of what was going on from a coaching staff standpoint between the Patriots and the Chargers last year. The Chargers were tired. You can look at their travel and you could call it an excuse, but guess what? Fatigue affects all of us. If you look at their travel, it affects them. But they were so out-coached, out-prepared.
100%.
And outplayed that it was over almost before it started. To me, when it comes down to if they do get to these crucial games, there isn't something that happened where I actually think it will happen differently. That's what it comes down to.
And I would counter by saying, okay, you have Gus Bradley and you have Ken Whisenhunt, but you also had Gus Bradley and Ken Whisenhunt in that situation with Anthony Lynn last year. No, it is a very strong argument to say, I'm sorry, but the biggest question mark, the biggest red flag is still, can Anthony Lynn get over that? Can he face the Bill Belichick of the world, make that adjustment on the fly, and get his team to either, you know, do the end around or just get through it and win? That is absolutely legit going into 2019.
Yeah. Some people think that the Patriots roster is better this year, right? Isn't that a thing, Fletch?
I think it is. I mean, what they did in the draft, getting to kill Harry, that's a great pickup for
they
a stud wide receiver.
They had 57 picks, right?
Something, probably 100.
I mean, it's like...
the Chargers, someone else is going to have to beat the Patriots in the playoffs for the Chargers to go to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. After watching that beatdown last year,
yeah,
you don't get 50 points better.
No, you don't. And I don't know if let's say the Chargers.
I think that's a really good way that you phrased it, Fletch, because if someone else can beat them, you know, if the Chargers can't, maybe the only way that it happens is if somebody else beats them.
That's right.
But who else do you have beating them? They went into overtime with the Chiefs, so they were right there. The Chiefs' defense is better this year. Can they get home field advantage? And maybe that somehow it happens. But I go back to what I said about the coaches, and I'm not convinced that Anthony Lynn can beat the Kansas City Chiefs. If the Chiefs beat the Patriots, and then all of a sudden we think that the Chargers would beat the Chiefs to get there, I don't see it.
playoff seeding and where the games are going to be played will probably have a large part to do with what the Chargers do.
Edward wants to weigh in. We'll talk about Fernando Tatis Jr.'s attempt for a rookie year in a moment. Edward, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, guys. Good morning from Colorado. How you guys doing?
Oh, how's the weather in Colorado, Edward?
It's in the high 80s. It's been, like, pretty nasty, man, ever since then.
So it means you're going to get a snowstorm tomorrow.
Definitely.
It's one day hot, one day snowy, one day rainy, one day hail. Crazy.
Okay, so you don't think they're going to go?
Absolutely not. I really don't. I mean, if you look at the schedule, they're going to lose to the Bears at the Bears at the 10 o'clock game. That's one. And then you got the Packers, you got the Steelers, you got the Colts. That alone, that's four losses, and that's not in the series with the Chiefs. And somehow, some way, the Donkeys or the Raiders find a way to win one game. But you're talking about 4 to 5 losses guaranteed, and that's just to get to the playoffs. Then you have to dealing with the Patriots and with the Chiefs again. I don't know, man. I don't think it's doable.
And Edward, I'm glad you called and disagreed. You're right. It is a formidable schedule. But a lot of the good teams have formidable schedules in the NFL. I just think the Chargers this year, and it may be their best chance, their closest time they're going to be to it, I think they just have the right amount of superstars at their positions that they can do it.
CJ says on Twitter, picking the Chargers, cost of picking the Chargers to win the Super Bowl is the best NFL news San Diego could have had for 2019. Book it, 3-13 ahead. Look at you.
It's not some sort of Jedi mind trick.
I think it is.
No, it's not. I honestly, they're stacked, man.
Big Rob, what do you say, buddy?
I got to go with Costas. I think they have to do one trade, and they got to get Jalen Ramsey for Melvin Gordon. He doesn't want to play for the team. I think that'll make our defense even better. You guys were just saying it. The secondary is great, but with Jalen Ramsey, I think we'll have like almost like a Seattle team almost for defense.
Yeah. You know, Big Rob, I don't know.
Nobody's giving up Jalen Ramsey for Melvin Gordon.
What?
The trade?
Yeah.
Idea? What happened?
I'm not ready to anoint them the second coming of the Legion of Boom.
I think you are.
But Derwin James is
a beast, man.
He is a beast, and he is just a level above so many other defenders in the NFL as a sophomore in the league.
Hyman wants to weigh in on this, 844-570-1360. Costa, he said it with I wouldn't say through your teeth, but there was some pain in your face, but he gave your opinion. He thinks the Chargers are going to the Super Bowl. Hi, man. Good morning, buddy.
Yes. My take on it, no way, no how. let's not forget who owns the team still. Bad karma. They took him from our city. They're never going to do anything. They never did anything here. They'll never do anything over there. No matter how good they look, no matter statistics, what have you. I was a fan since 78. The moment they left, I burned all my stuff. Done. They will never win anything.
Well, Jaime, if you listen, I'm all for a good jersey burn, but it sounds a little subjective. Your opinion, like I don't know if I can apply karma.
I know
to completely decide how they're going to be
as inept as the ownership group has been, and there's a laundry list of moves they have made that have made them look inept. They've also made some pretty good moves lately.
Well, but will they cost themselves? I mean, let's say over the, and Matt, we see you on a hold, buddy. We'll get to Matt's in there in just a moment. If you know, let's say that you've got a 10-year window, or let's say over the course of 10 years, you know that 3 of those years is your best chance to win. You go all in. Is this that 3-year time, and they're too cheap to pay Melvin Gordon to go after it right now, and you don't end up grabbing that opportunity? It could come down to ownership, potentially, if you think that much of Melvin Gordon.
I'm not saying that they are completely all chips in on this season, but I'm with you in this 3-year window. At some point, they better go chips in.
All right, Matt Snyder, CBS Sports. We'll talk a little rookie of the year, National League ROI. Matt, good morning, buddy. How are things?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Have you gone over, if the season ended today, who would be your rookie of the year in the National League?
Not specifically. But, man, it's close. It's really, really hard. Tatis missed time, so you have to ding him there. He's got the slash line over Pete Alonso, but man, Pete Alonso might hit 50 bombs. It's gonna go down to the wire. We're gonna have a photo finish here, I think.
Matt, will the people who vote on the Rookie of the Year honor, will they take into account how poorly the Padres are playing this year? And maybe conversely, in some strange way, that helps Fernando Tatis Jr. because he continues to shine?
I don't think so. You look at the voting history, and it doesn't really seem to favor winning teams the way that, like, MVP does sometimes. And I know a lot of times people like to say, oh, well, New York, Alonso's going to win because New York. Well, last year, Shohei Ohtani won the AL Rookie of the Year over Miguel Andujar from the Yankees. So I don't think that there are those built-in biases that we tend to think about when it comes to the awards. There's only one voter from every market in the BBWAA. So I think it's kind of balanced. So I don't think Tatis will get dinged.
Matt, where do you put up Mike Soroka? Now, Mike Soroka with the Braves, 10-2 with a 2.45 ERA. He's made 20 starts. Is he having a better season than Fernando Tatis Jr.?
Gosh, that's tough. It's so hard to judge position players versus pitchers. I think I would say no, but it's just, like I said, it's just so hard to judge. It just feels like an apples and oranges argument. I generally tend to side with the position players when it's pitchers versus position players, just because the position players play every single day, and the pitchers go only once every 5 days. You've got to have a head and shoulders above season for me. Like, I was for Justin Verlander to win the MVP when he did, just because there were no position players that were really deserving of it that year. But for the most part, I would generally side with a position player. So I think I would say no, but man, he's having such a good year.
So Mike Soroka being on the Braves that are as good as they are won't help him get an edge potentially over Fernando Tatis Jr. Because I've seen in some betting odds that he actually is above Tatis right now. You don't think it has anything to do with the Braves' success this year?
I mean, it's hard to get in the heads of individual voters who I am not personally speaking with. But again, just in looking at the voting history on the Rookie of the Year, generally speaking, the team being better doesn't seem to have that much of an impact compared to the MVP. And the Cy Young, for that matter, too, is more, generally speaking, the voting history says Rookie of the Year and Cy Young, voters tend more often to look at who had the best year instead of how good the team is, because the MVP has that value component, you know, like where people try to tie it to the team. On the Cy Young, it's just who's the best pitcher. On the Rookie of the Year, it's just who's the best rookie. So if we're going on what history has told us on the voting, the team success is not really used as much.
How much is WAR taken into consideration? Like, do they look right at it?
I think more and more. I think more and more it's taken a lot into consideration now. So if Tatis finishes with the highest WAR, I think there's a good chance that he's going to win. More and more, the voting body is getting more new school, and as things progress, it's becoming more and more of the set that people use the most. And like I said, it's as we get away from the value component and more into who's the best player, people are going to look more at that. So yeah, I think that does matter.
If you were a betting man, who do you say wins it?
Oh man, not Soroka. Either Tatis or Alonso. If I had to pick one, I think I would say Alonso, because I think he's going to hit over 50 bombs, and I think that's going to carry the day. But man, it's going to be close.
Makes us really sad, Matt. Just saying, you know, you're doing an interview in San Diego.
Oh, buddy.
Hey, Matt, always appreciate the time, man. Have a great day.
Sure thing.
Matt Snyder, CBS.
Here's the thing. If you do actually go by war, right, Pete Alonso and Fernando Tatis Jr. are tied in war at 3.9. Mike Soroka, pitcher with the Atlanta Braves, 10-2, 2.45 ERA, has a 4 war. Stands for wins above replacement player, if anybody cares. Now, Matt has done his homework. He knows that it doesn't necessarily equate to more wins on a team.
Yeah.
Means that you get a better chance to do it. But Soroka, as of now, from a betting odds that I've seen with the better war, I think it's got a really good chance to win it. And I think that the direction that the Padres go as a team will affect either, one, how Fernando Tatis Jr. is thought of, or two, does it affect Fernando directly? If a team is playing poorly, does it not push him to continue to be better the rest of the year and his numbers may slide?
But I can also see them saying, yeah, he's continuing to do the spectacular things that he does, but how really is it equating to the team being better and getting wins? And based on the second half of the season, not much.
Right.
Okay, USA Today has come out with their top 5 Hard Knocks moments of all time to date. Of course, it debuted with the Raiders last night. Get ready to cringe.
Hey everybody, Darren Smith here. Stay tuned. Coming up after Colin, I think they're going to let us back for show number 2. Hopefully we're a lot better than we were for show number 1. We're going to talk with Rich Eisen. Stay tuned right after Colin Cowherd here on Extra 1360.
Seared salmon or seared salmon?
Salmon.
Salmon?
Salmon.
So why not salmon?
It's salmon. You got to learn this stuff, bro. You got some money now. You're going to go to some nice places.
And I like to say, I want to see your salmon.
That's a clip from last night's debut of Hard Knocks with the Oakland Raiders, and that is rookie Jonathan Abram, who is a hell of a football player, is going to make that Raiders secondary better. But as a whole,
it didn't make the show better.
It didn't make the show better, and it didn't make him very likable right off of the bat. Now, you did have, for those of you who didn't see it on HBO, there was a situation where he and fellow number one draft choice, Cleveland Farrell, the big kid out of Clemson, Abram has a horse background. He has horses, was born with horses. And so he took Cleveland Farrell horseback riding in the vineyards of Napa.
Kind of sounds like you grew up talking to horses, maybe not humans, because he was annoying.
Yeah, so he had all this great stuff, you know, what type of horse it was and how you ride a horse and things like that. And that was a little endearing. But he had that give and take with Derek Carr, who has taken all the rookies out to, I think it was lunch, you know, little team building. And then there was a situation with John Gruden where in practice, and they're just in shells, shirts and helmets, where Abram was coming up and banging people and like rolling people ass over tea kettle, to the point where Gruden's got to pull him aside and say, hey, listen, I don't want you hitting, we're in shorts, I don't want you hitting our own guys, okay? And he just didn't take it there and go, you're right, coach. Won't happen again.
No, he was being obnoxious.
He was being obnoxious, and he kind of belabored the point. And you correct me if I'm wrong. Did he say to Gruden's face, you can't cut me, as in terms of I'm a number one draft choice?
No, I think you're talking about cut block. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think he was talking about someone paying him back. And this, you know, can't wait to talk with Nick about this on Friday. He'll be on this in the 8 o'clock hour. I was thinking of Nick. And I was incredibly unimpressed with the episode. I thought the episode was dull. I think that John Gruden, who has say in so much of the things, said, you know what, if you're going to do the Raiders, I'm going to make it as uninteresting as possible.
It's painful for us. It's going to be painful for you.
Especially coming off of Hugh Jackson allowing everything to be shown.
Yeah.
I think John Gruden is allowing nothing to be shown. But I thought of Nick during that episode, and particularly that offensive line, like the Chris Dealmans of the world, where... Oh. Why is John Gruden having to step in with a guy who is being too physical? Typically, it is the offense's job that if things are happening on an uneven standpoint, they even it out and they police themselves. Instead of John Gruden having to police what was happening, someone from the offensive line standpoint typically delivers a message, whether it's just done verbally or whether it's actually done physically. And it's more fun when it's done physically because it's the game of football. But, you know, you watch the episode, and I feel like it's going to be a really long season for the Raiders. Am I jumping to conclusions from one episode of Hard Knocks? Absolutely. But I look at the roster. I look at how the leadership standpoint looked to be kind of awkward. You know, I don't think Derek Carr is a great leader. Antonio Brown's feet aren't there. I mean, I thought Antonio Brown's kids actually stole the show, and they may have had the best question that was asked. Like, where's your future Hall of Fame quarterback, Dad?
Daddy, why are you not on the black team, Daddy?
I am on the black team. Daddy just got to wait to practice. You ready to see me work or what?
Why not running today?
Daddy, still feet still sore. Come on.
What's wrong with you?
Huh?
Where's Roethlisberger?
He played with the Steelers. Our quarterback Derek now. We don't play with Roethlisberger no more. We play with the Raiders.
Daddy.
We play with Derek Carr. That's my quarterback. You know his name? What's his name?
Derek Carter?
Derek Carr.
Now where's him, Daddy?
He's over there, number four.
Where?
Yeah, they're practicing.
I like how his kids said it like we say names we're not sure how it's pronounced. He's like, Ben Roethlisberger?
Ben
Where, Dad, where's Ben Roethlisberger?
Derek Carr?
Cost of vacations in Kualawawawa?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Kind of like that. Yeah.
Did you happen to see Ben Roethlisberger when you were Kualawawawa?
Oy. Yeah, very. It was underwhelming. There were some, here and there, some fun moments, some light moments, but overall it was, there wasn't the impactful, boom, this is Hard Knocks, it's here, we're going to get you fired up. It was kind of like, we'll see.
All right, so you got the top five?
We do have the top five, and I believe we have audio for the first one. Okay, so the top five, this is USA Today, with the debut of Hard Knocks last night. They came up with, now this is USA Today, mind you, their top five moments so far in the history of Hard Knocks. Number five was back in 2010, and that's when Jets cornerback Antonio Cromartie couldn't remember all of his kids' names.
Oh, man.
I said, get ready to cringe. That was... You're just sitting there listening to it. It may have been funny, but then you're going like, dude, pick up another hobby other than playing football and making children.
Yeah, I didn't.
Good Lord.
I didn't find that one funny.
No. Their fourth most memorable moment, 2015, when J.J. Watt, after practice and everyone was gone off the field, was still doing sled work. He was rolling that 1,000-pound tire up and down the field and then decided to put on his running shoes and run a couple of miles. The third most memorable moment, 2001, their first season, it was the Baltimore Ravens, and when they had the rookie show, the rookies impersonating Ray Lewis, linebacker on the team, and fortunately he didn't stab any of them when they were done. The second moment, 2010, when the Jets head coach Rex Ryan said, let's go eat a GD snack after he bitched out the team for the way they were acting. And their number one moment comes from last year's Hard Knocks with the Cleveland Browns, 2018, and offensive line coach Bob Wiley.
Wrong. All wrong. It's a hat. Short steps. Short steps are better than long steps. That's the only time in your life you're going to hear short is better than long. It's a hat. It's a hat. It's a hat. It's a hat. It's a hat.
Now, every time he said hut, his stomach would move up and below his throat, and then it went back down to his belt. And that's their number one moment.
Bob Wiley stole the show.
He did.
Remember he was talking about World War? The first World War? How they didn't stretch?
Right.
When they were running into...
He goes, you think those soldiers stretched and did all this damn stretching before they were going to run across Omaha Beach? F no.
Let's go eat a goddamn snack.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Rex.
Let me get Rex on the phone, update us on those feet. Antonio Brown's. That's where I felt like Hard Knocks was really exposed last night. And I don't know if I can blame Hard Knocks, because I think John Gruden is probably he is deciding all the content and what he's letting them do. I think they're paying him back. And as we tuned in to be educated on a documentary show of the Oakland Raiders in this particular season, the biggest storyline is actually what is going on with Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown's, it's one of the top five storylines right now in the NFL. And it's not a holdout, it's his feet. And there was a moment where he was sitting as he was taking his socks off, when we know what he was doing with his feet, the feet issues. And he has his feet up in the air, and the camera will not show what his feet look like. They couldn't talk about his feet seriously. They couldn't show us his feet. They weren't allowed to go near the biggest story. And I think that's one of the reasons why we feel so empty after that first episode. Yeah,
they show him in the first 3 minutes grimacing in pain, working out on that field before he sat down to put his socks on or take his socks off, where you could tell, okay, yeah, we know, and we knew going into it, something's wrong with Antonio Brown's feet. So if you're going to allow that footage, well, the cat is completely out of the bag on Antonio Brown's feet. Why not just go all the way with it?
They're partners.
I guess so. Now, you raised a great point.
It is not done by HBO. It is done by NFL Films, and NFL Films is in partnership with the NFL.
Well, and that's why they kind of glossed over Richie Cognito being a member of the Raiders. They showed an excerpt of one of his press conferences where he says, yeah, you know, I've kind of had some dark times, but I think the guys know that I'm all in. And they have him meeting Antonio Brown and saying hi and glad you're on the team. And they were kind of going back and forth.
And he came across likable.
So likable. But then again, that's
he's not trying to freeze your head.
No.
Tell that story. Was it interesting to see them meet like that?
You think they would have met before? Is that
completely they've both been to a ton of Pro Bowls. You would think that there would be crossover there.
You'd think they would have met before actual practice.
Yeah.
maybe something.
And they showed the Raiders getting together the first night of camp for their team meeting, or the night before the first day of camp, and they're all sitting there, and Gruden says, you know, knock on wood if you agree with me, and they're all like, and it's, really?
You know, I think like the Los Angeles Rams, when they moved to L.A., it seemed like they welcomed the cameras with open arms.
Yeah.
I mean, how much is Mike Mayock going to let us dive into that storyline? I don't know if Mike's going to allow to give up a lot because they want to keep it all to football. I don't think John Gruden's allow anything that's going to look really anything like years past or maybe even anything interesting. The Josh Jacobs story will be tremendous. We'll get to know young guys. I thought that the Last Chance U angle last night was an interesting one because I watched, you know, I know that Ollie kid. I watched that season. But there were maybe the two most interesting things were footage when they played from another show. Last Chance U, whenever John Madden talking about hitting the sled was really good
20-something years ago.
Hey, if you missed it, show shop.
103.3.
All right, enjoyed it today. Just a reminder, day two, Darren Smith coming at you at noon today.
New Good look, times.
Loose Cannons as well. Nick Hardwick, he'll be able to talk a lot more about this. I've never been in one of these, and I'll tell you what we're talking about in just a moment.
I've been in one.
You have been in one?
Right, one time.
All right, well, let's confirm this first, and then we'll talk about your experience of working on that bod of yours. Ian Rappaport, because last night, Hard Knocks would not address it.
No. He just had sore feet.
I mean, Hard Knocks won't address the team relocating, and they won't address the feet. Yeah. So there's a lot of stories that are going to go left untold from NFL Films. Now, NFL Films is owned by the NFL.
There we go.
They stayed away from it last night. The NFL Network is owned by the NFL, but this morning on the NFL Network, they would confirm what happened to Antonio Brown's feet. Here is Ian Rappaport in Napa.
As far as the backstory and what led to this, what I was told, talking to a couple Raiders people, basically the story that they are saying is that Antonio Brown used a cryogenic chamber without proper footwear, and that is why his feet ended up the way they did. Certainly there's some other questions medically for his feet, how they ended up looking like that, how he trained through feet which are really so badly injured that he really can't continue to train. A lot of questions there. But at the very least, that is the story they are saying. Still day-to-day, unclear when Antonio Brown's going to get back out at practice.
Can I speculate a little bit?
Yeah.
All right, because this is very Marty Cordova to me. Do you know the Marty Cordova story?
No.
Marty Cordova, who played outfield for the Baltimore Orioles, among other teams, he bought a tanning bed. He fell asleep.
Oh, good night.
In said tanning bed.
Ooh!
Because of what he did to his skin, he was told he could not play in day games because of the sun. Marty Cordova missed a number of games because of his tanning bed. I think that Antonio Brown bought a cryogenic chamber, did not know how to properly use it, either spent more time in it, whether going back to it more often, or stayed in it longer than he should have, and now has done severe damage to his feet, which I think his feet are going to heal. You hear specialists, was there a broken bone? No, just let your damn feet heal, dude.
Yeah.
But I think he bought one, and I think he used it improperly.
I've been in one once, and 3 minutes was the maximum you were allowed to go in it. And you step into it. Most guys will just go in their underwear or, you know, a pair of workout shorts. But you have booties on your feet.
Makes sense.
And I had gloves on my hands, And it's super, super, super cold air that they blast you with in that 3 minutes. And you come out and you do feel, you know, energized. But they were adamant about, yeah, you go in for 3 minutes and then you're out.
Right.
But they're also doing it with the tech. There was also a technician who worked at the place standing right there that says, okay, I'm going to hit start. And the machine shuts off after 3 minutes. Now get out.
Yeah, I mean, athletes buy a lot of these things. Remember, T.O. would climb into that thing and he would zip up. You know what I'm talking about?
The oxygen sock.
Hyperbaric chamber. Yeah.
For healing.
These athletes buy these things because they can afford it and you can have it at your house. You don't have to leave. My theory, he bought one. He didn't pay attention to what was probably told to him about how you operated, or he stayed in it too long, and now he paid the price and probably just continued to run around on those feet until they just cracked wide open.
It's painful to watch him not motor around because of those feet.
Well, he's not even at practice.
No.
And now it's time for the Show Shocker.
And I will tell you right now, I think the Chargers make the Super Bowl this year. I'm putting my name on it right now before the preseason starts. I think they are that good. I think they are going to the Super Bowl this year. I think everything is going to line up for them. The Raiders are not within reach of the Chargers or Chiefs.
This is big. Are you doing this solely so I'll stop talking about the Raiders?
No.
Or are you being serious right now?
I'm being dead serious right now. They are my pick for the AFC.
Now, a number of people have taken this as great news.
Well, they're thinking it's some sort of Jedi mind trick or, you know, reverse whatever.
Well, you did ruin the no-hitter last night.
I did. And I was trying to get people fired up to check it out.
CJ says this confirms 3-13.
Yeah.
Our man Slick Rick on the text line, Costa just put it out in the universe. Love it. 8-8 Chargers.
Got to go with what I feel, man. It's what I think. They're stacked. They're loaded. They're ready. We'll see.
619. Why did Hard Knocks cut out the part where Antonio Brown kids ask, why is your feet so effed up, Daddy? I don't know. Maybe that'll be episode two.
Using the F word.
Costume we have to thank today.
Trevor Sycamore from PewterReport.com on the 2019 Bucks. Former Raiders CEO Amy Trask. CBS Sports' Matt Snyder on the Rookie of the Year race in the NL. Those interviews available on the pod, sportssd.com. Goes without saying, Ben Mudflat Fletcher. Last but not least, you brave men and women of the United States Armed Forces. For what you do, what you've done for us, thanks for hanging out with us today, everybody. What do you say we do it again tomorrow? Herd coming up next. We're Extra 1360 Fox Sports San Diego.